You are bilingual in Czech and German, but you choose to write in German. Why is that?
The little possibility I had to study, I mean, the few schools I have, were in German. And then, but this is not the main reason. The main reason is that my mother came from a West Bohemian town called Žatec, German Zatz. And this town was, I would say, to, I don't know, maybe 80, maybe 90% German. So she talked German and also Czech. Fluently Czech, but not exactly, not correct. With my father, who came from Prague, it was the opposite. So I grew up with those two languages, but you know how it is. The mother, that's the main tone in the family, is what the mother is talking, huh? So we were at home, we were mostly talking German. And in those years, which means the late 20s and the first 30s of the last century, it was not so very extraordinary in Prague. It was more or less normal.
It was normal then, but today for a writer in Prague to be writing in German is quite extraordinary. People say that you're probably the only person writing in Prague in German today.
Today, but in literary, there is a very well-known Prague circle, which means Kafka, Werfel, Kish, and many others, which is something which exists until today in all the literary studies, etc. And they wrote in German. At the same time, naturally, there were Czech writers who wrote in Czech, and there was one of those famous cafes in Prague, the Arco, where the Czech and German writers usually came together, had discussions, and had a very friendly contact.
And in fact, one of your books is called Traumcafé einer Pragerin, the dream cafe of a Prague woman. What's that about? Is that about this cafe culture?
It is about a cafe which exists only in my fantasy. The Czech title of the same book is, for instance, and this is right, A Cafe Over Prague, which is a dream cafe. Probably because Prague is so much changing, which is good naturally, because it's in a time where everything is changing. But I am, of course, missing some things here, a certain atmosphere, a certain personal contact who used to be, who must be different now, I know that. But anyway, it's for me something which I'm missing. And so missing that, I constructed my own cafe in which I put all kind of personalities whom I met personally. And there's also another thing. It was somehow in my life that I was in contact with groups of people who were mostly, let's say, half a generation older than me. So naturally, they aren't here anymore, and I'm still here, and I'm missing this contact.
And in a way, you've almost become the official spokeswoman for this lost generation, haven't you? That people always will come back to you and say, what do you remember about Max Brod, about Egon Erwin Kish? Do you mind having that role as a kind of bridge to that pre-war German-speaking, partly Jewish generation of writers?
This is a phenomenon of the last years. Before that, it was, as you can imagine, completely different. And during those last years, which means from the time when Václav Havel became president, I became some kind of institution, I would say. People come and say, you must remember. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But the very funny thing is that I'm frequently asked by journalists and literary scientists about Kafka. Well, I was 8 years old when Kafka died. And once there was here, she was a female, a professor from Germany, and I told her, listen, I was 8 years old when he died. And she said, all right, but which impression did you have of him? So this is sometimes really a little bit funny. But on the other side, I'm glad and very happy when I can say what I know. I can't say anything that I don't know.
And in your writings, you return again and again to the past. Is it something that you feel you need to keep working out in your mind and in your memory?
As I'm the only member of my family who was not murdered by the Holocaust, as I'm here, as I'm still here, I'm rather old already, I can remember many things, and I can remember persons, not only personalities, people, human beings. And sometimes I don't like the way in which now is described the atmosphere and the doing of people long ago, because I think it is now judged and described out of the actual atmosphere and not in the atmosphere which then was. So I have somehow the feeling, I feel the necessity, as long as I can give some kind of witness, tell some kind of testimony, telling naturally, very subjectively, as I felt, as I experienced things, I'm glad to do it.
Most writers gain a lot of inspiration from the everyday world around them or from the encounters that they have with the culture around them, with the language that they're speaking every day. Do you find that because you're living in an entirely Czech-speaking city today, that you've lost some of that contact with your mother tongue, with German, and that you have to somehow bring the language out from your memory?
I have no problems with the Czech language, absolutely none. And what I am writing is even called the so-called Prague German. It's a little bit different from the German German. I'm aware of it, and I'm absolutely not trying to write the German German. It was like this, that I was already published in Germany in years when in my own country and here in Prague, I was not allowed not only not to publish my own text, I was even not allowed to, I don't know, to translate under my own name. I have done it, but somebody else had to sign it, etc. And so the German language became some kind of instrument of me. If you work with a language for years, then naturally you became, you know it very well, you can handle it very well. It's like if you have a violin, you can play on it. I feel that because just these days I had to write something in Czech for a Czech book. I feel the difference. In German, sometimes I have expressions which even doesn't exist, but I can make them for myself. And in Czech, I have to think it over. I can do it, but I have to think it over. It's a different. Probably because for years, I could work only because I had publishers there. They took my texts, and here, nothing.
And do you find it strange writing in a language that most of your neighbors, most of the people who live in the city of that's your home, can't understand, or they actually can't read your books in the original?
Well, I was very sorry, I must say, that for years in the neighbor Germany, my books came out and nothing here. And now finally, luckily, those last years, one book after the other comes out in Czech and I am now translated. Only in the very last book which came out, there are one or two stories which I wrote in Czech originally. But otherwise, I prefer to be translated, well translated, than to make it, I think it's not good possibly to work in two languages, literally.
So you don't translate your own work into Czech?
No, I prefer that somebody else translates it. Of course, then I have the chance that I can read it, I can correct it, I can say no, here I would prefer to say it a little bit otherwise. That is very good, this possibility I have.
And can you sympathize, for example, with someone like Milan Kundera, who refuses to have his work published in Czech because he's writing in French and he doesn't really want anybody else to translate it? Can you sympathize with that attitude?
I like Milan Kundera very much. I know him personally. But this, I think, is a little bit strange. Czech person has the right to decide for himself. I was not long ago in Luxembourg at some symposium or conference or whatever about the variety in culture. And there was, for instance, a Turkish writer who lives in Paris and writes French. A Russian writer, the same thing, lives in Paris, writes French. Then I was here living in Czech Prague and writing German, etc. It was a very interesting discussion there. And some of those colleagues said that they prefer the new language which they adopted. That is something which is strange to me. But on the other side, I think it is not decisive in which language you write. It is decisive, it seems to me, what you are writing. In whatsoever language.
But it also brings up the question of the fact that you're writing in German, which many Jewish people after the Second World War rejected as the language of the enemy and tried at any cost to get away from German. But you chose to remain in that cultural or linguistic milieu, didn't you?
Yes, I have very often, of course, heard the question, how can you write in German after what happened to you personally, which I mentioned already. But again, I must say the language. Why should I be against the language of Goethe and Heine and Bertolt Brecht and Böll to talk about the people of the grass, etc., etc.? And then what I mentioned again, I am writing the Prague German. I feel the difference. And I remember very well when I came after the war for the first time to Germany, and sometimes when I heard something on the street, and so it gave me really a shock. This is this German, or maybe not even the German, maybe the Nazi German, which is something different.
Your readership today is almost entirely in Germany, isn't it?
Well, I'm happy that I can say I have, because I have already, I don't know, some, maybe around 10 books in Germany. And I have already some kind of readers there. I'm very frequently invited to read in Germany. I have always a full house. And then the people come and want to talk to me. I have also a correspondence which is almost too much for me. And something which I think couldn't happen here, I don't know whether in other countries, German readers, I'm sometimes at home in the evening, the phone rings, and somebody calls me from Germany. I read your book. I just wanted to tell you that I liked it, or that it told me this or that. That always surprises me. But German readers do that.
In the course of your life, you've lived, or you've been forced to live, in many different parts of the world, in France, in Mexico, in Yugoslavia, in Casablanca. You've travelled immensely. And I've just been reading your story at home in Prague and sometimes elsewhere. How do you process all this travelling, all these experiences, in order to concentrate them into your writing? I mean, that particular story, for example, is almost directly autobiographical, isn't it?
You know, now when I'm really rather old and I'm living in Prague, and now I'm aware of it, that I feel at home in Prague. And it seems to me that I felt at home in Prague wherever I was. I was sure and knew at home I'm in this town. And this is something very important, because all those very exotic countries which I visited mostly, not because it was my voluntary, it was just pushed there by political events, etc., etc. But since I could finally come home again, and I'm still very much traveling, and now it's different. Now I can choose where I'm going to. Last year I was in Senegal, for instance. And I was, as I mentioned already, in Luxembourg, and I was in Brussels, etc. But now I can come home, and I feel somewhere being at home. This is an enormous difference.
Could you recount some of the episodes in that particular story, at home in Prague and sometimes elsewhere?
One of my, I think, most adventurous experience was Casablanca. Because now it is usual that you go to some travel agency, you buy a ticket and you are God knows where. But I'm until today, I'm sure that I was the very first girl of Prague who ever marched through Casablanca. It was involuntarily also. I was on my way to Mexico from France, and the boat on which I was stopped there and didn't continue. And so I was stuck there. First I was in some concentration camp, and then I somehow managed to become laissez-passer for 48 hours, and of course I never came back to this camp. And then I was half a year, full 6 months, living in Casablanca, and that is until today one of my greatest adventures in life.
And presumably you know the film Casablanca. Can you identify to some extent with the film?
I think it's a very good film. But it happened to me, for instance, once in Germany, in a school, that a boy of around 14, 15 years with very shiny eyes asked me whether I frequented Richie's bar in Casablanca. And of course, I didn't dare to tell him that never existed. That's a Hollywood invention. So I told this boy, when I was there, Richie's bar was not yet there. But when I was in Casablanca, maybe also therefore it was such a big adventure for me. I was very young then. I was completely alone. I had almost no money. I had to gain some money to be there even. And somehow I managed. And not only did I manage, I am, if it is possible, kind of grateful to myself that even in this very complicated situation, I enjoyed my being there. I somehow felt this is an adventure and take it.
In your book, Mandelduft, The Scent of Almonds, there's one episode involving the children in the Terezin concentration camp, isn't there? Which is very powerful, where they're seeing a recreation of a popular Czech children's puppet show, aren't they?
Well, this is in a story which is called Nobody on the Street. That was the first impression I had when I was for the first time in Terezin, not visiting it. I had to work there as a translator. But later, when I started to write about Terezin, which I think one should do, only in a way which today could be accepted by people, I think people are already fed up with stories about horrors, about killing. Unfortunately, we have always new stories about horror and killing. But in this Terezin, something happened which really happened. There were, as it is well known, hundreds and thousands of children also there. And there were, among the adults, there were also teachers and artists, etc. And they decided one day to make something for those children. And so they started a play with two popular figures, puppet figures, Huriminek, which is a little boy, and Spabel, which was his daddy. And so they made some kind of play, and the children were delighted to come, and they had a full hall, and started, and there was no reaction of the children. They didn't laugh at places where they usually laughed, etc. So one of the adults went between those two puppets and said, "What's the matter? I mean, you don't like our Huriminek anymore. What is it?" And a little girl asked, "Is this Huriminek now somebody from them?" And the adult said, "From whom? What do you mean?" She said, "Well, from the Kommandantur and those people, the Huriminek. But how could you think such a thing?" "Well, he has no yellow star," the little girl said, "and we all must have it." This is something which they somehow didn't think on. So they went and put on this little figure, on this puppet, a yellow star. And from this moment on, everything was all right, because he was again somebody of them and their darling. And this Hurvinek with the yellow star was for a long time in the Prague Jewish quarters in some exposition hanging. I'm afraid he isn't there anymore, but he really had the right to a place there.
A lot of what you write about seems to be on the subject of belonging or not belonging, or of being at home and not being at home. Today, in your late 80s in Prague, do you feel that you've within yourself found your home?
Absolutely. And I think the older I am, the more I feel that. Like something which belongs to me, that is something which nobody can prohibit to me. I mean, there were too many things which were I was not allowed to, but this is my own choice. I'm born here, I grew up here for a certain time, for a quite long time. I didn't feel at home here, not only when it was physically not possible to be here, but when I came finally back to the town where I used to live in a family, and I had no family anymore. And also many friends weren't here anymore. That was, for the beginning, a rather hard time, but that's already past. And I think it's a happiness, to, for me at least, to be in a place where you feel at home, which you know so intimately. I'm very frequently in London, and I love London, and I love Paris and other towns, but at home, I'm in Prague. And I also love in Prague that it is, one could say, it is a small big town. And there is some kind of intimacy in this town. And then also, which I'm very happy that it happened like this, Prague had the chance not having been bombed in the last World War. So everything is here, and I feel a certain continuity here, in spite of all the very bad events which also happened here.
Your writing has a very strong sense of place, of the topography of places and of the details of places. That they seem to be very closely entwined with thought, with memory, with the way that people are relating to one another. Why do you think that is?
I'm very frequently asked, how come that I'm optimistic in spite of all the things which happened to me? I mean, I was in prison during the war. I was in prison during the communist regime. I'm not a very healthy woman. I lost all my family, etc., etc. I think probably I have a positive point towards life. And this positive point towards life means also that I have pleasure of very small things. I can also have pleasure of big things, but I'm observing, I'm looking at events and people, and I go with the tram somewhere here in Prague, and I come home, and I'm full of adventures. I saw many things, and I like things, or I find things also a little bit funny, and, you know, I prefer to laugh than to weep.